Welcome to Dr. James Dobson's Family Talk. I'm Ryan Dobson, and our host is psychologist and best-selling author Dr. James Dobson.
And I'm Luann Crane, and as you all know by now, Easter Sunday is coming up this weekend, and it'll undoubtedly be celebrated with bunnies, eggs, and baskets brimming with chocolate. But really, how many of us will stop and associate these next few days with the death and resurrection of our Lord Jesus Christ?
Well, it makes me think of 1 Corinthians 15:1, which says, "Now, brothers and sisters, I want to remind you of the gospel I preached to you, which you received and on which you have taken your stand." And I think sometimes the Christian community has gotten away from that, and we've lost our focus on what's important. We've been talking about it at home because of the Christmas season that passed, where most people, it's just, you know, ornaments, and there's nothing about the Nativity. And we've been talking with Lincoln about that, and he's trying to decide, how do we decorate in remembering Jesus during this holiday?
Well, Ryan, you've pointed it out, because when you look around, it is obvious that Western civilization is becoming increasingly pluralistic, you know, politically correct, and unfortunately, like you just said, biblically illiterate. So many people today have very little sense of how their own lives have benefited directly from the influence of Christianity, and maybe they even now view the church with hostility or resentment because of some negative personal experiences.
Well, we want to weigh in on that debate today about the role of religion in our culture and how Christ and Christianity really has changed everything. And to do that, we're going to play a recorded discussion between my dad, Dr. James Dobson, and Dr. Alvin Schmidt, who's the author of a great book called How Christianity Changed the World.
Dr. Schmidt is a retired professor of sociology, and he and his wife, Carol, live in North Carolina. He has written a number of books that will really help us understand what is happening in the world today.
Well, my dad really admires Dr. Schmidt's work and his contributions to helping us have a better understanding of history, ancient history and contemporary history. So let's begin now with that recorded conversation with our host, Dr. James Dobson, asking Dr. Schmidt about what first piqued his interest in history here on this Family Talk broadcast.
This is a subject that just begged to be written because so little is understood about how Christianity did influence the cultures and civilization itself. What brought you to this point?
Well, one, perhaps two things. One is I discovered when I was preparing a sermon for the sermons I used to preach as a professor. I didn't do that very frequently, but I was supposed to preach a sermon for Christmas Eve, and then I thought I'd look up and see what Christianity has contributed to the world we live in, and I found there was very little or nothing available. A stray little article here and there had really only touched on it tangentially. And then the other one is that I saw as time went on that Christianity was frequently maligned and criticized unfairly, and I thought, well, let's see what the record really show.
Probably more now than any time in American history.
You're quite right.
And even going back, the media and the academic community are severely distorting the historical impact of Christianity. Let's go back and look at what the world was like before the time of Christ. Help people understand very quickly what the values were and how human beings were treated. And let's start with the sanctity of life.
Yes, this is one of the things that one discovers when you dig into the literature. I had often heard when I was a student before I went to the seminary that things were pretty bad at the time of the Greeks and the Romans, but I didn't realize how bad they were until I dug in on this particular subject. For example, life was cheap, as I mentioned in the book. Abortion was widespread. Children were abandoned. There was no law against it, as we would assume. And in addition to that, infanticide was very, very common, and girls were most vulnerable to that particular problem. Life was cheap in another way, in that people shed little or no tears when people were massacred, or they rejoiced when they saw the gladiators kill people in the various amphitheaters throughout the Roman Empire. Christianity came and elevated the sanctity of life by opposing abortion, by opposing abandonment of children. And by the year 374, a Christian emperor by this time, Valentinian, outlawed all of those behaviors.
You know, I had the privilege with my wife Shirley of going to Israel in 1993, and we visited a place called Megiddo. Have you ever been to Israel?
Yes, more than once.
Have you ever been to Megiddo?
Yes, each time I've been there.
It's just a very awe-inspiring place when you think of what happened there. But there is this huge altar made out of stone.
Exactly. I know which one you're talking about.
Yeah, you know, where they sacrifice children.
Yes.
I went around behind that. There's a huge pile of rocks. And I started kind of moving those rocks around. And there are millions of tiny bones there. But apparently those are the remains from thousands of years of the babies that were sacrificed in that place.
Yes, and it's not the only place. If you look at Halley's Bible Handbook, he mentions instances such as this too, of finding little bones here and there.
And so that was common for religious purposes. Those were sacrifices to Baal, as I understand it. They burned most of them.
And you know what's interesting? I say, for example, that when people sacrificed, there was no compassion, as we see. One of the surprises I discovered, there was really no compassion. Christianity introduced it. That may seem like a very revolutionary statement, but it's true. Let me just give you an example. Plutarch, a Roman writer who died in 120, talks about people, children being sacrificed in northern Africa, at the Carthaginians, at the old city of Carthage, basically. And here he says, quote, "They offered up their own children, and those who had no children would buy little ones from poor people and cut their throats as if they were so many little lambs or young birds. Meanwhile, the mother stood by without a tear or a moan." End of quote.
My goodness. And the Romans were just as vicious.
This was the Romans, basically, yes.
And the Greeks were just as vicious.
Yes, and you find other lack of compassion. Thucydides in the 4th century B.C., in his book The Peloponnesian War, whom I cite in here, for example, shows that when plagues hit, their own relatives would desert them. Christians came and nursed these people. The Romans thought these people were out of their minds. So there was no compassion in that sense either.
And then comes Jesus and says, "Suffer the little children to come unto me, for such is the kingdom of heaven." What a revolutionary idea.
Yeah, because to the Romans, life was cheap, as I said a moment ago. But in the eyes of the Christian, given the teachings of the Old Testament, New Testament, life was a gift of God. Man was made in the image of God, and therefore from the smallest form of life, even in the mother's womb, was considered sacred.
Why did the Romans abort babies?
Well, there were a number of reasons. Number one, girls were not desirable. So girls were the most frequently killed in terms of infanticide.
Yes.
It was to have very often to get rid of the evidence, the result of your promiscuity, that many of them were born out of wedlock. Marriage had basically deteriorated already since the Punic Wars in the 2nd century B.C., according to historians. And so sexual morality between husband and wife was basically non-existent. And so you had children or you got pregnant, you wanted to get rid of the evidence of your promiscuity. In addition to that, there was a desirable thing among the Romans that if you had less children, you had more status in society.
So some of the things we're seeing today have their roots back there.
They sure do.
Because human nature hasn't changed that much.
No.
If not regenerated, we do the same things that they did.
Yes, and I think that's one of the sad commentaries when we see we're beginning to imitate the Greeks and Romans, and I think the Roe versus Wade decision. And if you look at that particular decision, the justification that the justices made who voted for it, they cite the pagan literature in support of their
In what context?
Well, basically that abortion was permitted by the Greeks and the Romans, and so it's not that bad by implication for us to do so
goodness.
Now.
I mean, every evil thing known to man occurred back there. If we're going to start citing that as...
They cite it as justification. So in other words, we're not doing anything new or different. But the Greeks and the Romans, which were the predominant value formers in all of Europe and the Middle East?
Shirley and I also had the opportunity a couple of years ago to go to Rome and other parts of Italy, which was, I think, one of the most fascinating trips I've ever taken. I've been there before, but I had an opportunity this time to study a little more about what I was seeing. And the bloodthirsty aspect of that culture, the gladiatorial
yes,
the experiences and so on. It's just unbelievable how cheap life really was.
This was a big thrill. It was as big of a thrill for as it would be compared to our people going watching a football game. And they existed already from the middle of the 3rd century B.C., and they were then outlawed, Theodosius I, the Christian emperor in the 390s, and then his son outlawed them in the West in 404. And today we would think it unthinkable to have such an event take place. And by the hundreds and the thousands of these people were killed. And these events where the gladiatorial sports were not held on a regular basis, but whenever the emperor wanted to entertain the people or make a point and celebrate an event, they held them. And sometimes they lasted for weeks.
And they loved the blood.
They loved the blood. In fact, they would have, and I quote a sentence in here, how they would ridicule the person who was perhaps reluctant to stab the gladius, the sword, into the individual and call him, you know, we would say chicken and coward or whatnot, and egg him on. And that was a great climax of watching the gladiator shows.
That entire great civilization was built with slave labor, wasn't it?
Yes.
The Roman armies would conquer a land and then just take the youngest and strongest and most beautiful and send them back to Rome and use them for the rest of their lives.
About 75% of the Greek society was enslaved, and the Romans were pretty close to that as well.
So all of those structures, the ruins of which still exist, what's left of them,
Were built by slaves. With very few exceptions, right, because a citizen, an educated man, it was beneath his dignity to do anything with his hands. That was the work of a slave.
Yeah. Then came Christ and changed everything, or at least had an influence on everything. Explain how that came about.
Well, when Christ resurrected from the dead, the disciples were transformed by what they saw when they met him. And they went out literally and heeded the Great Commission, and they lived the life as he asked them to. Let your light so shine among men that they might glorify a Father who is in heaven. And they opposed all of these particular behaviors. I sometimes say when the Christians went to Rome, they did not do as the Romans did. To turn around the phrase that we often hear today. They did the very opposite. And in time, without any political involvement or organizing any political organizations, they turned the world upside down. As we already read in Acts 17, for example, that the Christians were accused of turning the world upside down. That pattern continued.
Now, homosexuality between adult males was less prominent than that with children.
By far.
With teenagers.
The Greeks call it pederasty, which we call pedophilia. Between an adult male was very rare. It was between an adult male and a puberty age boy, anywhere from 12 to 16.
What strikes me from your book is how little things have changed.
Yes.
I mean, these same trends are there. And the same evils are there. Let's talk about the role of women. Historically, women have been treated terribly throughout civilization, haven't they?
Yes, and again, this changed with Christ. Remember, Christ permitted women to follow him, which was an unacceptable behavior in his day and age. He taught women, Mary and Martha. He talked to the woman, the Samaritan woman at the well in John 4. And if you look at John 4, even the disciples were nonplussed. What are you doing? You're talking to a woman. That's a pretty close paraphrase. You didn't do that as a respectable man. Talk to a woman outside, talking to your wife, which was typically in your home, not out in public. The Jewish woman had to walk behind her husband, not beside him, not in front of him, but behind him.
What else can you tell us about marriage before Christ?
Well, child brides were very, very common throughout the whole so-called civilized world at that time. We read this, for example, from the Greek philosophers. It's even mentioned by the early Christian church fathers like St. Augustine and the like. And at 12, 13, a girl was given, and without her consent, she had to marry a given man. Christianity came along and changed that. The woman had the right to reject her suitor. She could get married later, and she wasn't forced to marry a given man. Practice that we still largely have with us to this day.
So, in essence, Christ defined morality.
Yes.
As we understand right. it today, certainly as Christians understand.
And he made it very tight definition, if you will. You know, he said, whoever so looks a woman with lust in his heart has already committed adultery. He didn't have to engage in the act, but it was a thinking and a thought already. So he really, if you might say, tightened the Old Testament law on adultery and didn't give Christians any wiggle room, if I may use
yeah,
that word.
Yeah, imagine that.
Yes.
Prior to that, a man could kill his wife.
Right.
Now he couldn't even think evil about her.
Right. Also in Jesus' time, only the adultery was defined on the basis of a woman's marital status. If a man was married, he could have sex with a single woman. He was not guilty of adultery. But the woman being married, having sex with a single man, was always guilty of adultery. Jesus came along and said, hey, there is no more difference on this line. When he even said, for example, that if you commit a lust looking at a woman in your heart, you've committed adultery. And then the Christians picked that up.
And Joseph honored Mary's virginity.
Yes.
Which is interesting.
Right.
Prior to that, a man could do anything he wanted.
Yes, very much. That was the norm. That was the ethic. It was prevalent everywhere.
Again, it angers me, if I may say so, that the Christian church and Christian teaching have been blamed by postmodernists of this day for oppression against women and children and homosexuals and others. When in fact, it was the beginning of love.
Yes, largely the result of ignorance. You know, you and I have all heard the statement that a little bit of learning is a dangerous thing. And this is very true relative to the people who control the media today or who write textbooks. You never find a positive reference about Christianity when it could be very well made and should be made. And here's an example that Christianity is there for. And the very freedoms that they have to criticize Christianity are in itself a product of Christianity.
How quickly did Jesus' teachings begin to change the wider world?
Well, it took time. For example, in the case of slavery, Christians admitted slaves into full membership. They baptized them, catechized them. They, by the 3rd century, Callistus became a bishop of Rome who was a former slave. Then you had, ironically, every now and then there were some Christians who operated with the pagan ethic and condoned slavery. But for the most part, most leaders in the Christian church were opposed to it. And by the time we get to the 13th and 14th century, slavery was pretty much non-existent all through Europe. So it took time.
Yeah, I want to come back to that question in the next program because we don't have time to expand on it now. But why do you think Jesus did not condemn slavery in stronger terms than he did? He told slaves to obey their masters. Can you explain that? Do you have any idea?
Well, but slavery at that time was not necessarily the same as it was, as we think of it, for example, as it was in the United States. The Greek word doulos, which means slave, can also mean servant, or what we would call today a person working for you, a hired person. Did he have that in mind? Well, I don't know. Jesus tried to change people through changing the hearts,
yes,
rather than start a social political movement. And I think that's about the best way we can explain it. He did not condone it, I don't think. Jesus also didn't go around condemning a lot of other behavior that was repugnant. Abortion was all around him.
Yeah.
He didn't even say anything about that, so to speak.
Or homosexuality.
Or homosexuality. So I guess that's about the best one can say, that this does not mean that he acquiesced to it or that he condoned it.
He came with a messianic purpose.
Right, to change the hearts of man, and then in time, man, through that effort, would change the culture and society and the organizations that perpetrated evil.
We're talking to Dr. Alvin J. Schmidt. There is so much in this book that I would like to talk to you about, and with your permission, we will devote another program to it. You worked 4 or 5 years
yes,
doing the research on yes, this book. you must have gotten lost in it. That's what I do when I start writing. I just become consumed
exactly.
by it.
Exactly. My wife would say, well, you know, you're at that sitting at the computer again. I says, right?
Yeah, Shirley wonders why I can sit there for 8 or 10 and sometimes 12 hours.
Exactly what you have to do.
Because I get so wrapped up in it, and it's so fascinating. And usually I'm the one that's learning.
Right.
You know?
And I often say writing, of course, as you know, is a lonesome task. You have to isolate yourself. Or I have something to say. You have to practice the life of a 20th century monk, just withdrawing from society in order to get it done.
The only difference for me is that I keep the television set on because that's what keeps me from going crazy. So I have a football game or basketball game or Wimbledon or something on while I'm writing.
I tend to like to listen to a CD music of some kind.
Well, you've done a great work here.
Well, thank
I hope
you.
Millions of people read this book. And certainly the entire Christian community, and we'll do what we can to get the word out. Thank you for flying here to be with us today, and if you'll just stick around, we'll talk some more next time.
Thank you.
And that is definitely one book I need to take the time to read myself. You've been listening to our host, Dr. James Dobson, with his special guest, Dr. Alvin Schmidt. We certainly have packed as much good information into these past 20 minutes as we could, and we'll hear more about our great Christian heritage next time from our guest. So return tomorrow, and Dr. Dobson, we're going to learn more about how women of that day were really treated.
You know, Luann, there was so little regard for women in most cultures before Christ came into the world.
Mm-hmm.
And when you put that into the context of what we've been learning today, about how women are treated in so many Middle Eastern countries, you can see just how much freedom the Christian faith has truly brought to women.
Mm-hmm. Well, Amen. Looking at Dr. Schmidt's book, How Christianity Changed the World, that's just one of the issues addressed in this resource, which contains, you know, a lot of fascinating material that will bolster your faith. I highly recommend you pick a copy of it up, and you can do so at drjamesdobson.org.
And, of course, while you're on our website, we would ask you to prayerfully consider contributing to our ministry at this time.
Well, that's what we're here for. Our purpose is to help families thrive and to mentor parents, to raise godly children. That's my passion.
Mm-hmm.
That's my calling. It's been there for more than 40 years,
mm-hmm.
and it's something I know the Lord has asked me to continue to do. The work that we're doing is changing lives, I believe, and we'd like to keep moving forward.
You can donate online at drjamesdobson.org by clicking the Donate tab, on our Facebook page and even on the Family Talk app, or when you call us, 877-732-6825. Again, 877-732-6825.
As we close today, some of our listeners may be aware that today is Maundy Thursday, which is the Christian feast that falls on the Thursday before Easter. It commemorates the Last Supper of our Lord with his disciples. So I don't do this often, Luann and Ryan, but I'd like to read from the passage in John which details that event which occurred on the night that Jesus was betrayed.
That's a great idea, Doctor.
Once again, the story is found in John chapter 13. It was just before the Passover festival. Jesus knew that the hour had come for him to leave the world and to go to the Father. Having loved his own who were in the world, he loved them to the end. The evening meal was in progress, and the devil had already prompted Judas, the son of Simon Iscariot, to betray Jesus. Now, Jesus knew that the Father had put all things under his power and that he had come from God and was returning to God. So he got up from the meal, took off his outer clothing, and wrapped a towel around his waist. After that, he poured water into a basin and began to wash his disciples' feet, drying them with the towel that was wrapped around him. He came to Simon Peter, who said to him, "Lord, are you going to wash my feet?" And Jesus replied, "You do not realize now what I'm doing, but later you will understand." "No," said Peter, "you shall never wash my feet." And Jesus answered, "Unless I wash you, you have no part with me."
Then, Lord, Simon Peter replied, not just my feet, but my hands and my head as well. Jesus answered, those who have had a bath need only to wash their feet. Their whole body is clean, and you are clean, though not every one of you. For he knew who was to betray him, and that is why he said not everyone was clean. When he had finished washing their feet, he put on his clothes and returned to the place. Do you understand what I have done for you? He asked them. You call me teacher and Lord, and rightly so, for that is what I am. Now that I, your Lord and teacher, have washed your feet, you should also wash one another's feet. I have set you an example that you should do as I have done for you. Very truly I tell you, no servant is greater than his master, nor is a messenger greater than the one who sent him. Now that you know these things, you will be blessed if you do them.
A very fitting passage here on this Maundy Thursday, taken out of John chapter 13. Thank you so much for joining us today, and please return tomorrow as we do commemorate Good Friday here as Christians in this holy season. We will hear more about the influence that Jesus Christ had on history. That's next time on Dr. James Dobson's Family Talk.
Family Talk is not affiliated with Focus on the Family.